The OTB Brief. Everything you need to know about sport every morning. Need to get on top of the day's sports news? Well, the OTB Brief is the only sports update you'll need every morning. With all the breaking stories, post-match reaction.
I always look about, you know, teams who've won a league, their mindsets, their body language, their hunger, desire. And I see that so much in this Liverpool team.
And the best bits from off the ball, all in a 10-minute podcast.
Rory McIlroy's game has changed a lot.
The OTB Brief. Weekday mornings from 7:20 a.m. on OTB Sports Radio. Listen on the OTB Sports app. The OTB Podcast Network.
Football on Off the Ball.
With Paddy Power.
Fueling the mischief in the beautiful game.
Gamble responsibly. See dunlewy.net.
Welcome along to the football show. Plenty for us to talk about between now and 10 p.m. The Champions League fixtures that kicked off at 8 p.m. are just getting underway now for the second half. Both Chelsea and Manchester United in action. United 1-1 currently against PSG, which probably wouldn't be a bad result for United given the way the group is going. RB Leipzig winning by 4-3 away to Bakhshir earlier on meant that the German side go up to 9 points. United with this would be on 10, and PSG would be needing a result against the Istanbul team in the final day to put pressure on both United and Leipzig. But as things stand, if this is a draw, it keeps three teams active into the final round of fixtures. Chelsea, we know, are already qualified for the round of 16. They're looking to wrap up their group with a victory in Sevilla, and it is Chelsea 1, Sevilla 0 at the break. Olivier Giroud has scored the goal for Chelsea, so they're in a very strong position to qualify. The other games elsewhere, it's Club Brugge 1, Zenit 0. Dortmund lead against Lazio by 1-0. Barcelona, with a very second string team, are 3-0 up away to Ferencváros. No Messi tonight. He's been left entirely rested, didn't make the trip to Budapest. Juventus, set to get second place in Barcelona's group, are 1-0 up away to Dinamo Kiev. And the two games that we mentioned, Manchester United 1, PSG 1, and Chelsea 1-0 up away to Sevilla. All those games just a couple of minutes now into the second half. Delighted to say Dan McDonald joins us on the football show. Dan, how are you getting on?
Hey, Will, how are things?
Yeah, not too bad. I'm keeping an eye on United and PSG. That has been my pick of the two games to watch, given that Chelsea were already qualified. And this is a little bit ill-tempered. Neymar and Scott McTominay at each other's throats going off there at halftime. Neymar doing his usual thing of scoring a goal and being fantastic in the build-up to that goal and then winding up everyone after that.
Yeah, well, I mean, the story of the game so far is probably that, you know, Fred should have been sent off twice. I mean, that's basically, there's been an ill-tempered nature to the game, but like that was obviously a key moment where Fred had the coming together with Paredes. And I don't know if you saw the incident, but I suppose a lot of people who are listening to this, you know, live or on playback will have seen it. And it's one of these ones where, I mean, when you have VAR, and as much as it's one of these ones where you don't like these type of red cards, I mean, Fred sort of makes a head contact in the direction of his opponent. He sort of butts down a small bit. Now, you know, he goes down very easily, but you're just fully expecting the referee to look at this and say, well, by the letter of the law, he probably has to go, even though it's sort of regrettable that it comes to this. But he's got away with it and then got a yellow card. And then a few minutes later, he's been guilty of a late tackle, and he should have got a second yellow card. So, but in many respects, that let off has sort of galvanised Manchester United. And yeah, there's a real spark to the game. But they've got their equaliser. And of course, they only need a draw to go through because, you know, if they're 3 points ahead of PSG, PSG can't catch them on the head-to-head. So as it stands, Manchester United are through if it stays this way. So they're in a great position, and PSG have to go and win it. And they're in a position of power when it comes to that.
I was just thinking, when it came to the Fred incident, had a look at it again at halftime there during the news, and Fred pushes his head forward. Like, Paredes does fall quite dramatically to the ground and tries to make a scene for the referee to have a look at the incident. But Fred is an idiot in terms of what he does, because all he has to do is stand his ground. But he pushes his head forward, which gives a referee a reason to send you off.
And listen, he gave the referee the decision to make, and that's it. And I've yet to hear a sort of a... I'm sure there will be a refereeing expert of some description who might be able to explain why he's come to the conclusion that he did, in terms of, I suppose, you know, how you phrase that red card and you know, what you deem it as, you know, what kind of conduct you deem it as. But, and, you know, I'm no expert on the specifics of refereeing, so I'm not going to bluff it on that. But I suppose we're so used to those type of decisions being given, particularly when you go to the, you know, for the referee's second viewing, that he's almost, the referee's taken the view that, well, listen, it looks like his own interpretation of it. I'm sure someone can text in otherwise, but as though to say, well, listen, this wasn't really that serious. I don't want to give him a red card for this. And that's fine, but it's always consistency with these things. And you'd expect someone who does similar in the next round of games or at the weekend or in another match tonight will definitely get sent off. So that's the clarity that you would need in it.
I'd imagine PSG at this stage, Dan, are sick of the sight of Marcus Rashford, given what he's done in the last couple of years against them. Now, his goal had a huge amount of luck attached to it in terms of the deflection is the main reason that the shot beats Keylor Navas, but it could potentially be a crucial goal for United if they don't lose tonight.
Yeah, I mean, they've just had a great chance to go 2-1 up as well. Like, it was a great break and a great move, and Martial Bassett it over. And they are in a situation now, you see, where, because PSG really need to win this game, their need to win this game is greater, because otherwise they're almost relying on how Manchester United approach the Leipzig game. They have to go for it, but as a result, they're committing bodies, and we know how good this Manchester United side can be when there's a bit of space on the counter-attack. So it's actually set up perfectly for them now. And they were almost a bit shell-shocked earlier on, and PSG really started the game very well and were well on top. But the way this game is set up now, it's, if you were to sort of script it from a Manchester United perspective, it's sort of set up in an ideal manner. And PSG are going to have to be really efficient with the ball when they have it. And Manchester United, to a degree, are happy to let them have it for spells, but they're going to break really fast when the opportunity breaks. And it's, I don't know. The game will be finished before the show is out, but it's looking good for Manchester United from where they're at. They're in a position to control what happens from here. So they've a great chance to seal qualification tonight and just take stress out of it. And when you consider, the away defeat in Turkey they had, I know that was a blip compared to the excellent results elsewhere, but to get it done with one game to go would be a bit of a, it would ease some tensions around them, certainly, that's for sure.
Yeah, and the former PSG striker Edinson Cavani is up front for United currently, and he had a big impact on the game against Southampton at the weekend. Really, he kind of turned things around. I don't think anyone really thought, Dan, that Cavani would be a bad signing, but I think a lot of people were a little bit concerned about how long he remained available and how late United actually signed him in the transfer window. But it looks so far, I know we're only a few games really into his career because he was a late start with the injury and then coming back from international duty, but it seems that he's an astute option brought in up front for them, and certainly he's an upgrade on Odion Ighalo to play up front.
Yeah, and it's what, yeah, of course, and you have a situation sometimes with these high profile players that when they're available, it's like, well, why are they available, as you say? But again, like he just gives them an option that he's just naturally at home. His natural domain is around the box. You sort of see, in a couple of chances, just how he sort of attacks the ball in the area at times. And like he's a slightly different option, where they have the more explosive, speedy options elsewhere. And he just gives them something different. And I don't know. I think it's too early to like, on the strength of a couple of decent displays, to suddenly declare someone, well, this is it, he's the answer to their problems. He was available for a reason. So we'll see. You see clubs take these sort of gambles on players before, and they can make a very good short-term impact. But over the longer term, you find out why they were available in the first place. But I suppose in the context of his career, it's a great opportunity. And, with the options they have elsewhere, like, this team can suit him. It would appear so. No one's doubting his ability. So, but it's early enough. It's early enough to suddenly declare, well, this is it. It's a perfect fit. But if you do have him 100% fit and focused, I mean, of course, he's better than the options that you mentioned.
Yeah, Chelsea decided to keep Olivier Giroud, despite Giroud last January, when it seemed the Euros would take place last summer, was looking at potentially leaving, but Frank Lampard convinced him to stay. He signed a contract extension. He's been used very sparingly because they've been using Timo Werner and also Tammy Abraham up front. But Olivier Giroud is starting up front in Seville tonight, and he's just given Chelsea a 2-0 lead, his second goal of the night against Sevilla. So Chelsea are 2-0 up, and they're going to qualify. There probably is, Dan, I would imagine, merit in Chelsea keeping Giroud crew around, because Werner will be covering maybe some of the wing positions as well as playing as number nine. Tammy Abraham has had an injury profile where he's missed games along the way, and Giroud just gives them that different option and quite a good backup available in their squad.
Yeah, like, I mean, I sometimes, like, you know, there's always a tendency in football to just want to you want change, you know, and naturally, if someone's not, and listen, from the player's perspective, you can understand why he might have been interested by some of the offers that were there, some of the options that are available. But like Giroud is, I mean, it's a fact. Like he's a World Cup winner. He's been around some very good sides, and if you're going to let someone like that leave, you'd want to have like a pretty good option available as backup for the scenarios that you mentioned. And like you're right, I mean, Werner's superb, you know, and his speed, and he's very much like, he's actually a very good signing for the Premier League because his attributes are very well suited to the Premier League. And you mentioned Abraham, who's like, you know, who has a certain level of quality there, but like, unless you've got something better lined up as another option, then why would you let someone like Giroud go? And in reality, like, he's going to strengthen a rival in some shape or form, be it in England or be it in Europe, that, like, you know, he is what he is, but like, why make a change for no reason when you can keep him there? And all it takes is one injury for him to become very important.
In terms of the Champions League in a more general way, we were talking about in the news round earlier, this idea being floated beyond 2024 that the Champions League could be radically changed around, Dan. This idea that they would go towards a Swiss system, as it's called, and there would be a big ladder competition. Teams would play 10 games, which is verging really on a European league as opposed to a group stage at that event. And also, fixtures will be determined in terms of qualification, not necessarily by teams that you play against. This whole idea that they're going to cram more fixtures into the first half of the year in Europe, it all to me looks very messy. And it's obviously aimed towards the big clubs being ensured that they'll be in the last 16 of the Champions League.
Yeah, I'm just watching Cavani hit the bar after
follow-up missed as well.
Fantastic break. But again, just the way the game is set up, it's perfect for them. But yeah, I mean, I have to admit, like, that at this stage, if I see another story about, well, here's a new plan for a Champions League expansion or European Super League or something, it feels like it's the same story repeating again and again. And I haven't, like, delved into the specifics of this one. I mean, like, my own perspective is that I pretty much hate all of these ideas. But there's an inevitability about, I suppose, the momentum towards it, that, like, UEFA are under a certain amount of pressure to try and keep the clubs with them, because obviously there's always talk of alternative breakaway competitions, and you know, FIFA's sort of version of the tournament that they've been floating, and all these games are going on, and you see within the Premier League the big clubs, you know, making moves, and it all seems to be one big negotiation eventually. And what happens is that you eventually just erode what, you know, the sort of the independence, not the independence, you erode the sort of accessibility of the Champions League that small bit more. Whereas like a couple of years back, you know, there would have been moves in a particular way and this and that, it would have been speculated. What we ended up with was, you know, security for four Italian clubs and for, you know, for four clubs from a number of leagues and one fewer place for champions from around Europe and so on. And all these proposals are basically a version of that. That UEFA want to maintain, because like UEFA can't afford to lose the Champions League because it's worth so much money to them. But at the same time, the UEFA also have the power of running competitions, and between the clubs and UEFA, it's always this back and forth. And I don't know, my prediction could be wrong, but it almost feels like there's an extreme prediction. And then what ultimately happens is maybe not 100% of what's floated, but it's sort of maybe a percentage more towards the direction of preserving the position of certain teams. And a lot of these plans are about, you know, guaranteeing places for teams if they have bad seasons and making it, as you say, more of a league within a league, that if you have a good performance within it, well, then you're not vulnerable to not qualifying through your own league. And I'm not in favour of it, but then I'm from probably coming at it from the perspective of, you know, I like the old idea of a champions competition being for champions from various countries. And I know that I'm swimming against the tide maybe of TV money and inevitably where that goes. But it, you know, there's no one proposal I've heard that I particularly think, yeah, that's the right one. Like, effectively, what they have at the moment is the right one. It has its imperfections. You will have one-sided games. You will have dead rubbers. But it probably has the balance of representation of the top clubs, but there's still a chance for your league winners from the smaller countries to get in there. And I wouldn't change it, but there's people running clubs who want to change it. So, like, where do we go? We know that it's all just one big negotiation, and there's a bit more ground given up eventually. And do we end up with that Super League? Like, maybe we do, but I tend to think is there a real desire to go that far? I'm not so sure.
And there is a little bit of a trickle-down effect when it comes to all this too, because I was just looking at a Europa League preview ahead of this week's penultimate round of fixtures, and the amount of teams from the big five leagues who finished well in cup competitions or just outside their top four are qualifying in the Europa League for the knockout stages, while the champions this season from the smaller leagues haven't done particularly well. We seem to be moving towards a time, Dan, when realistically we're going to be looking at European competitions which are so dominated by the top four or five big leagues.
Yeah, look, I mean, I suppose we're probably there already, save for the odd Ajax, and you'll have, you know, in the Europa League there's been the odd run. But of course, like, we have this big change from next year as well, where they're making the Europa League more exclusive, and that a lot of the teams from the smaller countries, such as Ireland, but even like bigger leagues, you know, more significant leagues than our own one, a lot of those teams are going to start off in this third league, the Conference League, with the exception of the champions. With the exception of, like, the champions will always, you know, well, in the next couple of years at least, will start in the Champions League and can drop down to the Europa League, as Dundalk have. And but then there's this third league there, but you're going to have this situation that, you know, they want to make the Europa League almost like a Champions League too, you know, a bit more of an exclusive competition, because as we know what happens in the latter stages of the Europa League anyway, like, you'll have the Europa League groups this year, which is all fine, but the teams that come third in the Champions League groups get dropped into it, and in some cases, like, you could have PSG in it now. You know, and so, but like, that is, I mean, there's no easy solution to these problems. There's just the haves and the have-nots, and UEFA politically to try and soften the blow of the inevitable takeover by the big four and five leagues, and they generate so much money, they can sort of shout and get what they want to a certain degree. What UEFA are trying to do for the other leagues is say, well, at least we'll have this Conference League, so there'll be more group stage football for teams from countries into later in the year. I think they're guaranteeing that, I'm not sure what the amount is, but, like, you know, over 20 countries will have group stage football next year. It just so happens that, might even be more than that, it just so happens that a lot of them, you know, their representation is going to be in the UEFA Conference League, and they haven't announced what the money is for that competition yet, what it's really going to be worth. And there's even suggestion TV-wise it might end up Thursday afternoon and stuff. So, like, the degree to which there's a prestige associated with that is a matter of debate. But, like, this is the eternal question in football, that there's, you know, the things of, you know, we unless you have a PSG style takeover, you know, the lines are set, and these are the teams that will dominate, these are the leagues that will dominate, and everyone else is just in there to try and get as much money as they can and get the odd big game, the odd glamour game. And that's I would argue that you should always aspire that there will be that route there for teams to get there, even if when they get there, they're going to have some tough defeats, as we've seen. But you're right. I was looking, like, Dundalk have no points in the Europa League. And, I mean, it's very plausible they'll end up with no points, even though I actually think they've competed pretty well, apart from the Arsenal game. But I was looking at the other teams that have no points today. And, like, you've got Ghent from Belgium, but, Karabag, who are, like, haven't been over there last year, are like a massive club in their own right in Azerbaijan, like a really proper operation, and they've got no points in the Europa League. Ludo Goretz from Bulgaria, the same. It's tough, but that's the price you pay for, like, domination being concentrated in the hands of a few clubs. I mean, a lot of the TV consumers in America and Asia don't really care about that, even if, you know, some traditional heartlands and powers for football in Europe are sort of not really part of the big vision for the game where it goes forward.
both sides at Old Trafford have hit the crossbar in recent minutes. As Dan mentioned, Cavani crashed one off the crossbar in front of the Stretford end. PSG have hit the top of the crossbar. Marquinhos will be quite disappointed he didn't do better with his chance. It was pulled to the back post. Marquinhos heading it. I think David De Gea had it covered anyway, but it's looped up and hit the top of the crossbar. There is, I don't know how much you're seeing in the background, Dan, as you're chatting to me at the moment, but there's we talked about the niggle in the first half. This is a kind of a feel of a Champions League knockout game about it. You see Neymar and Fred coming together a few moments ago. You have Marquinhos trying to get Martial sent off when they went up for an aerial challenge. This is a feeling of a knockout stages game as opposed to a group game at the moment.
No, it's great stuff. You know, I mean, I'm watching it here and like it's sort of actually almost, it's hard not to be drawn to it because there's quite a lot going on. But I mean, as I said, like PSG, for a club whose whole project is about trying to win the Champions League, like they are... They're sort of like in real danger of being eliminated here. I mean, that's basically, you know, where they're at. And I actually watched that the game earlier, Leipzig won 4-3, which was an absolutely insane game. You know, and the sort of the level of it actually, I mean, there was some pretty average defending in it. And it's one of these games where you think, 4-3, you know, in Turkey, would this be happening if fans were in the stadium? Or is this one of these games that was so error-strewn? Because I don't know, like this, both teams were going for it because they needed to go for it. And there's an element of that about this game here. But from PSG's perspective, that it's almost so open because of the stakes. You know, the stakes are such. But I think we're going to have a thrill in the last 25 minutes because PSG really need to win this game to be in control of their destiny. So and even then, like they're in it. I mean, it's catastrophic for them. You know, there'll be a management change and you'd imagine there'll be a major fallout if they do lose. So it's all set up as I speak. Rashford on the attack again, and yeah, there's chances everywhere.
Yeah, Rashford maybe a little bit unlucky that PSG managed to scarper back when it seemed he was in initially. Keylor Navas committed himself out and pushed Rashford wide, and then that just gave the defence a little bit of time to come back and cover. But it continues to be a goal apiece. As things stand, as Dan mentioned, either RB Leipzig or PSG, one of the semi-finalists from last season's Champions League, are going to be dropping down into the Europa League if United can get themselves a point ahead of their trip to Germany in the last round of fixtures. We'll chat about Caoimhín Kelleher in a few minutes' time, Dan, in terms of his performance last night, but just to touch on a bit of news that was coming out from yesterday, and still a bit of clarity needed on this, but the English FA and what's going to happen potentially with Irish players going over to academies from now on, and whether being Irish is going to be enough to be considered to not need a visa or a permit to join an academy in the UK. It all seems a little bit up in the air at the moment.
It does, yeah. I suppose this has been talked about for a while. I think even Johnny Ward was on the show at one stage a while back. He had a guest on discussing this back when, obviously Brexit's been in our lives since 2016, but it was, I suppose, you know, around the various agreements being thrashed out, and at one stage it basically became clear. Well, I say it became clear as PSG really should have scored. It became clear that... That Premier League clubs would not be able, and by extension Football League clubs, would not be able to sign players from EU countries until they're 18. And this led to a big discussion in these parts about, well, this is a game changer in Ireland. All of a sudden, you know, our players who leave at 16 will now have to stay at home until they're 18. And there was a real sense around, say, the players that are currently sort of 16, you know, in that sort of age bracket, that they were almost going to be the last ones to go in that way. But from my understanding, as much as the, so yesterday there was a documentation was formally released by the FA and the EFL and the Premier League to PSG
has just scored through their captain Marquinhos. It's not the most pretty goal you'll ever see from Thomas Tuchel's side. It's a corner which United didn't defend particularly well. It was forced back over to the right hand side of the box, and eventually it found its way across to Marquinhos. It's a corner in from Neymar, not particularly well defended at first. Shot comes from Verratti. They're looking at this potentially for offside with VAR at the moment.
No.
I think Marquinhos is onside though when that ball comes across. And he pokes it past David De Gea. I think he's in line, Dan, with Lindelof when we look back at the replay there.
Yeah, no, that'll be okay. That'll be okay, I think. I'd be surprised if they change that up. But I'm loath to call these things, but I think he should be safe. There was no No real sense of them checking it, but we're just waiting now for the confirmation. But now, really, really sort of, I mean, like they've had their chances, Manchester United, but they're sort of sloppy now to concede in the manner that they have. You know, as you mentioned, it was just slow reactions in the breakdown from a corner and a bit of a fortunate deflection to some degree, but they were slow to react. And yeah, we'll see. They're having a look at it here. Are.
We were getting to see the old classic lines on the pitch currently, but I think Marquinhos is onside when that ball gets pulled back.
His right heel is back. It's like, do we have to get the pencil out to draw it again to figure out where what part of his body was where? But they're playing on. They're playing on. Doesn't make sense.
Didn't need the T-square this time around. But when it comes to now there's...
Oh,
we're going to have a red card here for... I'm guessing one of the Manchester United players. This is for obviously words that were exchanged. Fred has finally got his red card.
I mean, it's like the old episode of 15-1 where you have the three lights. Like, you know, his third one has gone out here now. He's done. William Stewart sends him off. It's very hard to like think you have a huge amount of sympathy for him. It takes a bad touch. Ander Herrera gets in.
It's lungy as well.
For a player on a yellow who's nearly got sent off twice. Now, he does get a bit of contact in the ball, but I think he's got a few extra minutes in this game that he was meant to. So, it's actually, he does get the ball and then takes the man. I don't know. I can understand why he'd be a bit aggrieved, but it feels like in the context of the game, that's something evening itself out.
Yeah, United are appealing at the moment to try and get VAR to have a look at this and potentially overturn what probably should have been his third card of the night. He has been sent off for two yellows and the referee is standing by his decision. So Fred has been sent off. Manchester United now 2-1 down away to PSG. So all action, a terrible first touch by Fred. He then comes across Ander Herrera, just gets a foot on it before he gets there. Then Fred gets a lot of the ball down after that.
He does, but he gets the ball and then touches it onto Herrera and sort of takes him. It's one of these ones when you slow it down, it looks a bit more harsh. But again, yeah, in the context of what happened in the first half, it's hard to have too much sympathy. But just to go back to that point about the Brexit issue, so it did appear, you know, that we would have this stop, you know, that all of a sudden things would change. But my understanding is that last week clubs in England were told by the authorities there that they were good to go in terms of recruiting Irish players age 16 and upwards after Brexit. And as I said, there was documentation released yesterday by the Premier League, the EFL and the FA, which included no line in it about an exception for Ireland or, you know, different rules for Ireland or, you know, the only reference to Ireland was in the index. There was a reference to player and a reference to United Kingdom and Ireland, but they haven't really clarified the position. The assumption is that it's to do with their special relationship between the two countries, between the movement of workers, but it would still, I'm very conscious of getting bogged down into this, but you would still have to write something in to the FIFA statutes on transfers to say that there is an exception to rules for people moving between the UK and Ireland. And that hasn't been put in the FIFA rules yet. I checked this out with the English FA yesterday, and they said they were still in correspondence with FIFA about this. But basically, long story short, there are clubs from England in the last week who have stepped up their pursuit and have been in touch with sort of academies and people in Ireland to say they have been working off the understanding that they have no reason to not pursue young Irish players, you know, of any age, you know, once they're sort of 16 and upwards, sorry, going forward from next year and future years. So they're basically saying that supply line isn't going to stop. So while there will be no more, and definitely it's absolutely seems to be reasonably clear, unless you move your entire family, that there'll be no more sort of Cesc Fabregas cases, you know, going to England when they're 16, 17, unless there's real, you know, clubs will find a way to get around it, maybe for exceptional players. But it does seem like that there's a feeling that Irish lads will still be good to go. But it requires clarity, as you say, because the associations themselves haven't nailed it down. And I've been in discussions with people, I suppose, involved in football today who are going off what people's actions are, but they don't necessarily have the documentation to support what they're doing.
A lot like Brexit, a lot up in the air as we get ready to
Yeah, Jesus. I mean, even as I'm talking about it, I'm thinking this is like, this should be more black and white than it actually is, you know, and it's not. But then it's so beautifully Brexit in that respect that it's clear as mud. But I suppose you're looking at the actions of clubs rather than the words, and they seem to have been told they can go for it. There was some chat a while back that a couple of English clubs were looking to take a player or two as a test case, just to test the waters and see if anyone legally stopped them. But I'm not sure if it's going to come to that.
Right, that's one to keep an eye on. Chelsea have just scored a third goal. Olivier Giroud has his hat-trick. They're 3-0 up away to the Europa League winners, Sevilla. Paris Saint-Germain still continue to lead against now 10-man Manchester United. Fred sending off has led to Rashford getting the hook, and Paul Pogba has come on for the last half hour or so there. Juventus still lead 3-0 against Dinamo Kiev. Barcelona 3-0 up away to Ferencváros. Lazio have equalised in West Germany against Dortmund. It's now Dortmund 1, Lazio 1. And Club Brugge are 3-0 up at home to Zenit. We'll take a very short break. We're talking Caoimhín Kelleher and whether Vera Powell will be staying on as the Irish women's manager when we come back after these. Welcome back to the football show. Will O'Callaghan sitting in for Joe Molloy on this Wednesday evening. Champions League action continuing. We are now heading towards the last 10 minutes or so of the game at Old Trafford. Manchester United are 2-1 down against PSG. They've made a double substitution, taking off their strike force. Rashford was taken off for Pogba a few minutes ago. Now Donny van de Beek has come on, and so has Mason Greenwood for Martial and Cavani. So an entire change of United's front two, as it was, and that's a half chance for Paul Pogba, which would have been pretty spectacular on the edge of the area, but his overhead kick has gone just over. So Manchester United now looking for an equaliser. Dan McDonald is still here with us. Dan, to go back 24 hours, Caoimhín Kelleher, huge night for him last night. Adrian not getting the chance to fill in for Alisson, so Kelleher came in for his Champions League debut. He's the first Irishman in 4 years to play in the Champions League, and he acquitted himself very well. You know, two good saves, was very good with his feet all night. I'm sure when we saw the hug from Jurgen Klopp at the end, it was a way of Jurgen Klopp saying that was a good night's work from the young man.
Oh, listen, he did really well. And of course, we're biased to some degree in the sense that obviously, you know, we're so starved of an Irish Champions League story that you obsessively focus on one when you have it. And, you know, when things go well, you can almost overemphasize the good. But I mean, even take the green tinted approach away from it, and I mean, Klopp went to him at full time, and you can see even how his performance has, I suppose, been received away from Ireland. Just has been a general talking point that he really impressed people sort of locally in Liverpool, and he did exceptionally well. I mean, Klopp explained clearly why he picked him. That he wanted someone with football ability, as in, you know, he got the edge, he got the nod because of his sort of comfort with the ball at his feet, which is a very important part of the game now, the good distribution. And there was a couple of moments where there was almost a bit of a swagger in terms of how he received the ball and sort of pinged it off in a direction. And he is sort of the modern goalkeeper. And I was sort of writing about this today, like he from a very young age, I mean, I was part of a group that interviewed him back in 2015 before he went to the European Under 17 finals in Bulgaria. And there's almost a specific quote from him within that about how, well, you know, he's styling himself Manuel Neuer. He likes to hang around, you know, be out of his goal, but also spoke about how he played outfield when he was younger. He was a striker, and how he felt it was really important to be good with the ball at your feet and not to just kick the ball away when you get it as a goalkeeper. And he was only 16 when he said that, but he was sort of speaking, he was predicting his own future in the sense that the skills that he developed there are what has marked him out from a lot of others, because of course he's a good shot stopper. Like, you can't be a goalkeeper at that level without being that, you know. They're all exceptional to some degree, those that are around, but certainly it does appear that one of the main criteria that can mark you out from others in your generation is your proficiency in that department, and that's certainly an area where he's very comfortable. And he did great. Like, he's had League Cup games previously which have been a bit helter-skelter. You know, he's conceded a couple of goals, and I think that can go both ways. Like, when you have a young goalkeeper, there can be a tendency to, like, overanalyze the goals they concede as well, and I sort of accentuate the negative as much as we accentuate the positive when you have a night like last night. But I think what's more consistent is that the regard he's held in at Liverpool seems to be very consistent. They see him every day. Klopp really likes him. It did appear like there was a plan that he would go on loan to Holland this year, only for Alisson's injury situation leading to concerns about letting him leave the building, which in itself is a compliment. And I think now he's very well placed to be the number two. If he's picked for a big game, he's going to be in it going forward.
Yeah, slight double-edged sword to all that as well, though, Dan. And David Sned was pointing out, he was tweeting him last night, that he was probably on his way to Holland, but for the fact that, as you say, he became the second-choice goalkeeper and Klopp said, no, he's staying around for this season. The thing is now, he has probably moved ahead of Adrian as second choice. There's not going to be too many opportunities for him to play, realistically, once Alisson gets back. And from a purely selfish Irish perspective, as great as it is to learn from a top-quality goalkeeper every day in the training field at Melwood, it'd be great at Caoimhín Kelleher's age for him to be out getting some first-team football.
No, well, it's true. I think that's a very fair point. Now, he is he's young for a keeper. You know, he's 20, 22 this year. But, yeah, it's a valid argument, and it is a double-edged sword. And I know that it's obviously a congested fixture schedule, and the fact that Alisson's had a couple of issues this year, you know, are they going to take him out of the firing line, you know, occasionally? I suppose when it comes round to certain cup games, Liverpool have obviously qualified, so you'd imagine not going to be rushing him back for the next Champions League game. But it's still, yeah, as you say, it's still not very much, and it's very plausible you get to March and he's played maybe 4-5 games max. Irish wise, he's in a situation where Darren Randolph is probably not going to play any more than that, if at all. And the other player, you know, Mark Travers isn't playing at Bournemouth. He's very well thought of. It's a position we're doing very well. You know, we've great options. And the one that is playing is Gavin Bazunu, who was very well regarded at Man City, is very well regarded at Man City. He's got a new contract, was in their Champions League squad for the knockout at the end of last season. But they deliberately sent him to Rochdale, where he's getting a full season in League One, which is a hell of an education for at a team such as Rochdale, who are in a relegation battle. And I know Bazunu's really in the sharp end of stuff there. And Kelleher's never had that. Like, he's actually played very, very little senior football. And that is the worry. But I don't think he's going to be knocking on the door to get out of Liverpool too quickly, because all of a sudden you're number two, if you really are number two, like, you're very close to being involved in some really, really big matches. And like what Kelleher has done last night, I think anyway, like, once you have a bit of form in the book, to use horse racing parlance, like, now he's shown that he can be trusted to a degree. Like, they're the kind of nights that can make your career, you know, that he's not just stuck in that reserve zone. That now he's got there, that really he's got loads of time on his side. So, like, I understand the pressure, and I understand from an Irish selfish perspective, but I think if he really is number two, I don't think he's going to be antagonising, because he's so close to something massive.
Yeah,
so close to something really massive.
Champions League, about 3 minutes left of normal time in the games which are currently underway. Chelsea are cruising to the top spot in their group. They're 4-0 up away to Sevilla. Paris Saint-Germain, understandably, are slowing everything down. It's amazing how players pick up cramp with about 2 minutes to go when you're 2-1 up at Old Trafford. But PSG lead by 2-1. And as things stand, that will leave three teams, because Leipzig went on to 9 points earlier tonight, on 9 going into the final round of fixtures. So Manchester United will need a result, because you would assume the PSG will beat Başakşehir in their last fixture. United will need a result in Germany if they're to qualify for the round of 16. What a difference one goal would make in these closing stages. The Republic of Ireland women's team, Dan, losing out to Germany 3-1 last evening. The only team to score against Germany in the qualifying stages for what's now going to be Euro 2023. Vera Pauw was very emotional after the game when she was speaking to Tony O'Donoghue on RTE, and she was saying that it's probably not her decision exclusively as to whether she stays on, but was calling them my team, and she was very confident they qualify for a World Cup. But I guess the FAI probably have a decision to make now in terms of keeping Vera Pauw around and keeping her resourced to try and go for a bid to qualify for the next major championships.
Yeah, like, I mean, she's obviously a very high profile figure within the women's game, and like, it was, you know, viewed as a coup to get her. I think it must be acknowledged that, like, she hasn't had a flawless campaign. I mean, it's clear that, like, you know, you could see from the home performances and listening to comments from players that, like, you know, they've they welcomed her arrival and her partnership as well with Eileen Gleeson there. And like, you know, there seemed to be a real positivity around it. But the flip side is, like, you know, they did throw away some silly points. Like, there was big question marks around the decision making in Ukraine in terms of the goalkeeper, in terms of the maybe they weren't so quick about making substitutions in that match as well. So it's, I don't know, like, is the power fully in her court? You know, is the ball fully in her court in terms of where she stands? I think obviously the FAI in general is in a real sort of difficult position at the moment financially, and given their issues with the women's game in the past, I don't think they're going to be wanted to be seen in it, you know, to be left in a situation whereby, you know, it's a resources issue that they're not keeping someone on. I think they've set the standards in terms of they need to almost improve. They've improved conditions and improved spending and improved the sort of outlay on the women's team. So it can't really be financial reasons that causes an issue for them. It may just be that they need to decide if they're fully convinced she is the right person. And as a new CEO in there, to what extent are they in a position to make that decision? I know that Rue Doctor obviously really very much oversees this area, and it probably comes to his door as much as anyone. But it's a bit unusual it's been left hanging. But as I said, it's not a case of, well, we really need you to stay and people are begging. Like, there's obviously, there's two takes on the campaign. Like, that, yes, they've taken giant strides forward from where they were, but they also sort of messed it up a bit. And, you know, it's not as if there was a rookie coach in charge. So, like, she has sort of questions to answer about how things have gone as well, too. It's not exactly been a story of triumph. I think there's a missed opportunity there. And I don't, like, you know, I hate, like, you know, drawing comparisons all the time, but, like, obviously if a sort of the men's team manager had made similar decisions, like, they would have been slaughtered for some of them. So she has to be subject to the same scrutiny and the same review when it comes to whatever contractual decision needs to be made.
Because I'd imagine, Dan, like, the one that will really come up will be the goalkeeping position, which was a problem with the points being dropped in Ukraine particularly. You know, notwithstanding how late the substitutions were to try and change the attack around when it wasn't working in Kiev. But to go through three different goalkeepers and probably only to settle on the goalkeeper who looked the most effective in the last fixture when it seemed all hope was lost, that's something they'll have to look back on, because, you know, goalkeeper over the last couple of years has cost Ireland quite a few points.
No, it did. And, like, now the thing is, like, I thought they were pretty good last night, you know, and if you go off the most recent performance, and, you know, like, they're sort of, I mean, they're always going to lose that game, unfortunately, realistically, as PSG make it 3-1.
As Neymar put it to bed now, yeah.
Yeah, they're probably always going to lose that game, as much as that's like a hyper-negative stamp, but they actually really, you know, compared to how other teams in the group got on against Germany, like, you look at that and there's almost that sense of frustration. It's like, well, if they'd had that same level of application in their away matches, they wouldn't have been in that position. They wouldn't have missed out. So you would probably look at that and think, yes, and you know, they picked the right, you know, they picked Grace Maloney, and they got a lot of things right and how they approached that game. And I suppose the percentage call is probably to stick, you know, like, that you don't make change just for the sake of change. But I can understand why there's a valid debate to be had around it. And I will also say as well that, I mean, it's one thing to just look at results from the outside. I'm not privy to the, you know, goings on in the camp. And I'm sure, like, we could have a perception of how things are going, and you know, there could be other views on how things are going, and people have to do their due diligence on it and just check they're happy with everything and how everything's running and if they're getting value for money in every area, etc. But you would think that if there would have to be a compelling reason to change, but they've obviously left the hanging to some degree. So it's interesting that it's not set in stone. It's not 100% decided. And who knows? She may have other options herself.
Yeah. Well, we shall see what happens. Dan McDonald, thanks a million for joining us on the Football Show. Very much the dying embers of the games in the Champions League. Chelsea have actually just won 4-0 away to Sevilla, so they'll top their group. And Neymar's second goal has given PSG a 3-1 lead late on against Manchester United. We'll take a very short break.
Football on Off the Ball.
With Paddy Power. Fueling the mischief in the beautiful game. Gamble responsibly. CWE.net.
That was an OTB Podcast Network presentation.